Most e-commerce brand owners, what they believe is finding success with Google Ads, it's all about the buttons that you click within the Google Ads account. And this could not be further away from the truth, because ultimately, the way your business is structured, the way your account on Google is structured, determines how much scale your brand can even achieve.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast. Here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. In this episode, we're getting all Google Ads, a subject I love as I spent 10 years running a Google Ads agency. But I would not trust myself to run anyone's Google Ads anymore because it's changed so much in the last few years. From the ad creation to the tracking to the targeting and fundamentally to how you go about structuring your account, which is still totally crucial for success, but totally different to how it was before. Our guest for this episode will be taking us through his tried and tested perfect Google Ads account structure, including lots of optimization, tracking, feed, and other advice too. So if you're spending money on Google Ads, you need this episode. You're going to get tips that are going to help you right now and lots of advice on how to build greater success with Google Ads into next year as well. Now, this is one of our occasional masterclass episodes where we get an e-commerce expert onto the show to share the key things you need to know in one e-commerce subject. And this one is a little more special than those we've done before. We're trying something new on the show, selling guest slots. Now, don't turn off, because if this episode wasn't up to our normal standards, I would have deleted it, refunded the guest money, and you would not be hearing it. Providing you with quality, insightful content remains my number one priority. And I think this new test will enable us to do that even better than before. Why, I hear you cry. Well, there's three reasons. First of all, I'm doing a pre-call with each of our paying guests to make sure their episode is spot on. Secondly, generally, when someone's got skin in the game, when they paid some cash, they produce better content. And these guests need to wow you all to make their marketing investment pay off. Third and finally, we're doing another test. We're also recording these as videos, which we'll be releasing later on YouTube. So if you want to use this again for a team lunch and learn session, they are going to be available there too. I would love to know what you think about this move, because we are in test mode with this. So your feedback would be greatly appreciated. Love it, hate it, got a suggestion? I am all ears. Just head to ecommercemasterplan.com to find out how to get in touch, or message me direct on LinkedIn. And of course, if you want to jump the queue and pay for a guest slot on this show, I'd love to hear from you. Right, it's almost time to meet our guest and get stuck in. Please listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips, frequently described as the best bit of the show, and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest, Sri Kanase. Sri is the founder of Yuru Marketing, where he and his team run Google Ads and YouTube Ads for some of the biggest e-commerce brands in the world and have helped hundreds of brands to scale. In fact, Yuru Marketing is one of the fastest growing and top rated Google Ads PPC marketing agencies in the USA because they are all about your results. Hello, Sri.
Chloe, thank you for having me here this morning.
It's great to have you on the show and to be, well, as I said in the intro, for me to get to be back in Google Ads land for a while and learn what's going on is a real treat for me. And I know the audience are really going to love what you're going to be telling them. So before we get into the Google Ads stuff, though, how did you end up in this world of e-commerce?
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting question, because I started actually back about 5 to 6 years ago when I was a high school student, looking to just purchase extra video games, because during that time, my parents wanted me to just focus on studying, which I absolutely did not want to do because I didn't see myself doing a job anytime. So that's what got me into the e-commerce world, basically selling all the things from my garage on eBay and Amazon. Flash forward 2 to 3 years after I had some marketing experience running Facebook ads, Google ads, and whatnot, I finally started my own e-commerce brand, and the rest is history, basically just going in all just on Google Ads and Facebook Ads, but mostly Google Ads.
I love that. They say constraint is the master of innovation, I think, isn't it? And it's like, there's nothing more constraining than your parents going, we are not buying you any more of that. It's like, I will find a way. There will be a way. So I love that route into e-commerce. So now you are deep in people's Google Ads accounts, you and your team, building them for success. Why is the account structure such an important part of that process? And what is the account structure?
Most e-commerce brand owners, what they believe is finding success with Google Ads, it's all about the buttons that you click within the Google Ads account. And this could not be further away from the truth, because ultimately, the way your business is structured, the way your account on Google is structured, determines how much scale your brand can even achieve. And the account structure with Google Ads, it's not some fancy word for some crazy amounts of campaigns, like 50 different campaigns with all these fancy nitty-gritty details. Rather, it's about how you approach Google Ads in general, how you tell the algorithm exactly what you want. Now, when I say account structure, I'm simply referring to the way you are basically distributing your budgets and allocating your budgets across a specific goal. So in general, if I had to just sum up the account structure as a whole, it basically refers to the 80-20 rule, where 80% of your budgets go towards cold traffic prospecting campaigns, which are high buying intent. 20% of your budget goes towards retargeting and branded search traffic. When you combine both of these traffic types together, that's when you even set up the account structure, and that's when your account even becomes eligible to scale to the next level.
Got you. So it's all about getting really clear on our objectives and putting our budgets in the right places for that. How does PMAX fit into that?
Yeah. So PMAX, what you want to understand is PMAX is a small part of the whole. It's not the whole pie. It's one piece of the pie. Performance Max campaigns, they're high buying intent prospecting campaigns, which falls under our 80% rule that I mentioned earlier, which means Performance Max needs to be part of your strategy. Now, this is going to ultimately depend on how much data your account has, if it's a brand new account, if it's been scaling for months and years. Those things determine how valuable a Performance Max campaign is. But ultimately, for any campaign type to work, doesn't matter if it's PMAX, doesn't matter if it's a standard shopping campaign or anything else, your foundation needs to be placed. So for this account structure to even work properly, the first steps you need to follow is essentially to have an optimized product feed. Now, with Google Ads or shopping ads specifically, your product feed is your creative. The better your creative is, as we know with Facebook ads, TikTok ads and whatnot, the better your ads will perform. It's the same thing with Google. But the creative, it's not some video ad you made. It's not some image ad. It's literally the product itself, which means your product images, they need to be the opposite of your competitors. I see so many brands out there just go in, use the same exact product image as what they do on Facebook, TikTok, and then they're wondering why things aren't working. Well, it's because your competitors on Google Shopping, at least, they're right next to you. It's 50 different competitors competing for that same exact click side by side, which means the moment your brand blends in is the moment your brand starts to die.
Can I jump in on your feed question there? Because I find so many brands just go, here's my feed. I'll just take whatever it gives me and just spit that into Google and run with it. Do you do a lot of work with your clients on actually optimizing that feed, on picking different product images that are on the website and on optimizing that data as part of the process? So we're not just saying have a feed, we're talking optimize your feed here.
Absolutely. That's the first step actually we take before even touching the campaigns, because optimizing the feed involves looking at the previous data you already have within your ad account, because Google Ads provides a lot of valuable data regarding the feed itself, such as certain keywords you might be ranking for. It even tells you important information, for example, the CTRs. The CTRs can tell you how good is your product image and whatnot. Using all that data is how you optimize the feed, and then making the product titles better, images, etc., going into the merchant center, having reviews, etc., because this ultimately plays into the account structure. And Performance Max, keep in mind, Performance Max essentially means maximizing your performance. That's why the campaign was designed. It's designed to be smart bidding. But if your feed is not smart, if it's not ideal, if it's not directing the algorithm in the right way, it's going to get confused. And that's when your account structure comes crumbling down. So Performance Max, small part of the entire puzzle, but it needs to be optimized the right way.
Got you. So we're optimizing the feed, not just for how the customers, how the searcher sees it, but also for the data it's feeding into Google. So as Google understands those products and can show them in the right way. So it's like a double-edged thing, I suppose.
Exactly. It's optimized for the algorithm and the user looking at it.
Sri, if we're talking about feeding the algorithm here, that phrase which we all seem to use way too much at the moment, but is so essential, does the conversion tracking side of things come into this as well? So the customer behavior data, I suppose, that we're feeding back into Google, is that a key part of this too?
That's a very important part, because the conversion tracking, if it's not set up properly, is going to submit a lot of inaccurate data to the campaigns. And if the campaigns are getting inaccurate data, well, they're optimizing off of that inaccurate data, which means they're going to go after the wrong kind of person, which ultimately just, it's like a nail in the coffin for optimization and just scaling the brand in terms of an account structure.
So like, I know on Facebook ads, people are now feeding in all kinds of on-website behavior data other than purely they bought. Should we be doing exactly the same thing when it comes to Google? You know, what happened on the website pre-conversion to give it extra data? Or are we still limited to just conversion when it comes to Google Ads feeds?
In terms of the Google Ads feed, there's certain types of data you can provide, which is external to just conversions. For example, the first way is connecting your Google Analytics account to your Google Ads account. And you can import certain conversions that are not just sales onto your Google Ads account. You can also do things which are more conversion related, like upload your customer list to Google Ads. Also have things like add to cart, initiate checkout as conversion events, which ultimately what it's doing is on the account level, it's providing the algorithm enough data to basically so that it can distinguish between who's going to add to cart versus who's going to initiate checkout, so on and so forth. So ultimately it does help.
Got you. Cool. Okay. So you mentioned there's the 80-20 rule. Is that, you know, 80% goes into acquisition activity and we have campaigns that are purely acquisition focused. And then the rest of it is the retargeting with purely retargeting focused campaigns. Is that how we should be thinking, you know, totaling up our 80s and our 20s?
Absolutely. So that's the start that gets you into the right account structure. But from there onwards, it's about the campaigns, because ultimately the campaigns will determine how you distinguish between the 80-20 rule. Now, one key thing I had mentioned earlier was high buying intent campaigns for cold prospecting. This is super important, because when I say cold prospecting, a lot of e-commerce brand owners also put demand gen campaigns or display campaigns under this category. And this is not going to work out, because demand gen, display, et cetera, these campaigns are designed to generate demand. They're generating basically traffic to your website, which is not high buying intent. And if your brand is already not scaling, if it's already not at the profitable levels you want it to, then these campaigns are just using unnecessary budgets from your total budgets, which is not what we want. We want to be focusing the 80% on high buying intent campaigns like Performance Max, Standard Shopping, YouTube campaigns even. These three are the main ones. And then the 20%, you can do things like YouTube, search, shopping, Performance Max, et cetera. Same for the 80% rule. But now, this is where the TPS approach, which is something I personally developed myself, comes into play. Because the way you distinguish these campaigns, it should not just be a one-size-fits-all approach. Most brands out there that I even talk to right now, they have this one-size-fits-all approach where they have a bunch of different products, hundreds and thousands of SKUs inside of one major smart bidding campaign. They're expecting it to also go after these bunch of different assets, which they've added within the asset group section, the Performance Max, and they're wondering why nothing is really gaining momentum. Well, the thing is, when you do that, you end up overloading the campaign with too much information, with too much for it to do. And that's exactly what Google wants, because now that means Google can use your money to test different stuff. And when I say test, that just means Google is just taking up your money, basically, and just throwing it out there, hoping something sticks. You don't want that. You want to be more direct. The TPS approach helps with that. The T portion of the TPS approach stands for testing. This is basically where you implement a smart bidding-based approach. Could be Performance Max, Standard Shopping, doesn't really matter. But basically an approach just for testing different products. This means this approach, maybe it's one campaign, maybe it's three campaigns, all based on similarities. So within the testing category, I like to separate out my campaigns based on maybe the same collections, or maybe the same profit margins, or maybe the same gross margins, whatever it is, make sure it's based on similarities. But these campaigns are designed just for testing. And you're not going to confuse the algorithm in any way, shape, or form by adding other types of products in there. Because from this testing approach, we will now go into the P portion of the TPS approach, which stands for profitability. Because once you're testing, you're going to start finding products which are profitable. We want to separate them from those that are getting tested. Because if we don't, Google will not be able to fully spend all of your money on it and scale it eventually. So we separate it out into its own smart bidding-based approach. Could be another performance max, standard shopping. Again, the nitty-gritty details don't really matter here as much as the entire approach. And from here, you can transition that profitability campaign into scaling, because eventually, if these products really were profitable in the start, they're probably going to start scaling at this point. And that's when now, instead of you trying to scale and test and make products profitable all in one approach, now you have three separate ways of doing that. And everything is separate from each other. You have some products getting scaled. You have some products which are profitable. You have some products which you don't know if they're profitable yet because they're getting tested. And this is where the TPS approach, this is where the 80-20 rule really shines, because now once you have something that's gaining momentum, once you have something that's working, this gives you the ability to now go into testing further things. So the main goal of this TPS approach and the 80-20 rule is not to just stay at the 80-20 rule. Usually it can become the 80-15-5 rule. It can become the 60-40 rule as you find some momentum. And when I say 80-15-5, I'm basically referring to where 80% still goes towards cold prospecting for high buying intent. Now, instead of 20%, 15% goes towards retargeting and things like branded search campaigns. And the 5% you have left over of your budget, maybe if you spend $100 a day, then $5 a day should go towards demand gen campaigns and display campaigns. Now, this is where you can incorporate these cold traffic campaign types, because now you already have a set kind of approach. Something's already working and you have some momentum. Whereas if you just did it in the start, it's probably going to confuse the algorithm way too much.
Got you. So that part, when we bring in that 5% that's on those demand gen display, the really cold stuff, that is, we don't put that in at the beginning, because at the beginning we're working out what works and we just be putting a big old hose of water into something with lots of holes in it. But if we work to the 80-20, we follow the TPS, then we fill in those holes and we're ready for that colder data to come through. Is that what you're saying, Sri?
Absolutely. Because all we're doing here in the start is we're training the algorithm to go after the right person. If you were to go after these unnecessary campaigns right from the beginning, or even when you're scaling, but you're not really sure what's working, or you don't have really something that's gaining momentum, then all this does is it changes the trajectory and the direction of the algorithm, and it makes it go in a completely different way. Because these type of traffic coming from demand gen display, it's not the highest quality. It's designed to just generate demand, essentially. And when you combine that with performance max or standard shopping, especially in the wrong time when you don't have TPS already established, or when you don't have certain products which are already best selling, well, then you're kind of diverting the attention of the algorithm from finding something that works to now just throwing money in the air and getting people into your website.
Oh, that's so clever. So first off, we get our conversion tracking and our feed as the best we can guess it needs to be. Then we split our whole account by 80% of our campaign budget is all about cold campaigns, 20% is about retargeting campaigns. And then within that, we're going to run your TPS system to train the algorithm on the right stuff. And then once that started performing, we start adding in that cold data. I want to come back to your TPS piece, because I think that's, you know, the testing, profitability, scaling, it seems so simple, but so few businesses are doing it. We're literally saying that you might, if you were a women's fashion brand, you'd put all your maxi dresses into one group as your T, your testing, see which ones perform well, and then they get moved into a profit group so as you can give them a bit more budget and let them fly a bit more. And then if they continue to do well, then you move them to a third group for scaling. Is that how we do this?
Absolutely. So the main goal, again, of the TPS approach, it's to first find something that's working from the T portion of the strategy. So like you said, maxi dresses. Now you're testing maxi dresses separately from another portion of your other collections, basically. If you have 50 different collections, you don't want to be jam-packing all of them together inside one approach. You would rather have a T approach at the top, but then the T approach can be subcategorized into like 3, 5, 10 campaigns, whatever you like. That's up to you. That's up to your approach and how many collections you have, how you decide to segregate, etc. But the main goal here is to find all three different types of product, because I classify this, the reason why I even came up with the cheapest approach is because you want to have classification based on the product life cycle. A product has its own life cycle, believe it or not, where a product can be in the testing phase because the audience doesn't know about it. It can be in the profitability phase because the audience knows about it and now they like it. Or it can be in the scaling phase where the audience just loves it and they can't get enough of it, essentially. And when you mix up these three different life cycles, that's where the problems arise. That's where so many brands are like, we're doing everything we can, we're spending more money, but we're in a plateau, or we're not really able to scale to the next level. It's because the algorithm has joined all of these three different life cycle based products together, and now it's not able to take any of them in the right direction, essentially.
Does it matter how many products we do or don't have in the T level, the testing level? Like, is there a minimum and a maximum? I'm guessing there must be a maximum, but is there a minimum?
Honestly, there is no minimum, nor there is a maximum when it comes to the TPS approach. You don't want to have a million SKUs. I would say that would be the maximum if you had to choose, but you want to essentially have just a select few number of products, and that's with a similarity. That's the main goal here. It doesn't matter how many you have, as long as they're similar to one another, because what I often also see is where brands have a campaign where there's some products which are for $5 and some products for $5,000 in the same campaign. And even though it's similar, and maybe in terms of the collection or whatnot, it doesn't really have a similarity, because somebody who buys a $5 product thinks very differently than somebody who buys a $5,000 product. And that's where the TPS approach has to come in and really segregate things out.
So it really is kind of you can't apply one T-level segmentation to every business. It really does depend on margins, price points, collections, and so forth. And I guess a bit of trial and error in and of itself to get that right for a brand.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's kind of like level one, level two of optimization. What happens next is we've got our 80-20 set up, we've got our TPS rocking and rolling, and we've changed our 80-20 to be an 80-15-5, where we've added in that 5% of demand gen and display to fill the whole funnel up. Where do we go? Do we go next? Do we have to stick to those percentages? Where do we spend most of our time and effort? Where do we take it next, Sri?
Yeah, so once you have something that's already working, the TPS is working, you're with the 80-15-5 rule at this point, you have all types of traffic type coming in, because the main goal here, it was to establish sort of a loop, a circle within your ad account, where at the very top of the loop, it's cold traffic. It's pushing the cold traffic into this loop, into this circle. But then at the very bottom of the loop is the retargeting, is the branded search. That's where the top and the bottom portion of the circle is getting connected. And then the final parts, which is maybe on the left-hand side, top left corner, that's the 5% of demand gen. That completes the entire loop. So this loop is what we wanted to establish within your ad accounts. Once that's established, this is the beauty of the TPS approach and the 80-20 rule, where now it's customized based on your account and your needs, where you don't have to stick to the 80-15-5 rule once things are working. You change it to the 60-40 rule, because by this point, let's say you find out that search campaigns or just demand gen campaigns don't really work at all for your brand, no matter what you do. Well, in that case, you don't need the 5 anymore. You could make it back to 80-20. You could now change the shift or focus to the 60-40 rule, maybe, because now you're noticing that the cold traffic is kind of starting to plateau out and you need a little bit of more retargeting to help out with the cold traffic. Whatever you do, it's about changing that percentage up to match your brand's and your business's needs. But the main goal here is to now start optimizing your back end based on the data coming in to make sure this loop stays healthy and stays strong and there's no gaps within this loop. When I say optimizing the backend, I'm simply referring to using the data that's now coming in, because if you did this correctly, most likely the data will be quality data with the right keywords, not just a bunch of branded keywords. It should be a mixture of both or more cold traffic if you were following the 80-20 rule. But using those keywords to improve your titles, improve your descriptions, looking at the other metrics such as CTRs, because again, by this point, if the quality of traffic is high, then if whatever your CTR is, that's a real resemblance of your business and your products. From there, you can improve your product images and basically incorporate more of those winning products, whatever you have. And that's kind of how you distinguish from this 80-20 rule and make it turn into something that fits your business more. Just ongoing optimizations every 14 to 30 days.
Nice. Thank you for that. Now, as the podcast audience are hearing this, it is early November. it's that time of year. So can we start implementing this now if we're focused on Black Friday and peak Christmas sales? Is this a good thing to start implementing because it's better to start than not be starting? Or are there particular bits you would focus on if you were a brand hearing this and going, I need this as they're going through this today? So what's your November advice?
Yeah. So first of all, any time is a good time to start with the 80-20 rule with the TPS approach. There's no real good time. The best time is always yesterday. But when it comes to November, when it comes to Q4, what you want to understand is the 80-20 rule, the TPS approach, is going to help your brand even more during this time. Because you want to understand, during this time, there's going to be a lot of competitors bidding very high. There's going to be a lot of competitors spending a lot of money. They're going to be trying all these fancy approaches, fancy strategies. And that's where you need to come in with this TPS approach, with this 80-20 rule, to essentially stand out, make the algorithm's life easier, which is what this is designed to do. But the only change I would do within November and the Q4 era for this specific strategy is to maybe focus a little bit less on the testing side of things and more on the P and the S portion of the strategy, because testing should be done throughout Q1 to Q3. Q4 is all about scale. And if you spend 80% of your budget on testing, well, in that situation, you're going to be left behind. So I would, again, customize this approach a bit, maybe make it 40-60, where 40% of the budget goes towards testing and 60% is going towards just scaling campaigns and prospecting in any way, shape, or form. And that's kind of the main difference I would do for Q4. Otherwise, everything else should be the exact same. There needs to be no difference. And that's, the beauty of this approach, which it lets you customize based on your needs. You don't need to stick to 80-20. You can change it to however you like based on the season.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, it's time for the top tips. Not that you haven't given us a whole load of those already, Sri. So I'm super excited to hear what you've got for us in these, because I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So Sri, are you ready for the top tips?
I'm ready.
Okay, you're very confident there. I love it. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
The number one book which has influenced my life in the best way, not just in the business world, but in personal life in general, I would say is Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. One of the best books out there to understand just psychology and just understand how to really live your life to the best potential.
Napoleon Hill is one of the classics, isn't he? He's like if you made a big like family tree of business books, he'd be right up there, row one. So love a recommendation on a classic. Thank you. Okay, traffic top tip then. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Honestly, I think when it comes to Google Ads specifically, YouTube Ads deserves to be number one. Because YouTube ads is sort of that little underdog placement, underdog traffic type, which most brands, because they're not really familiar with it, they don't really know how it works, they try to avoid it. It's like the last kind of resort for most brands. And I think personally, just seeing my experience on working with so many big brands who have winning creatives from Facebook and TikTok, which we just use on YouTube, that YouTube can be one of the most profitable and most long-lasting campaigns you launch if you do it the right way. So I do think YouTube ads is number one.
Nice. Yeah, there definitely are not enough people using YouTube ads. And based on how high Google have set the fees to go ad-free on YouTube, I mean, like compared to a Netflix subscription, it's mad. Clearly, they are making so much money off the ads, which must mean it's working that they don't want to lower that subscription. That's my kind of like high level point of view on why you should be doing YouTube ads. Okay, tool top tip then. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
When it comes to my agency, and even sometimes with my own e-commerce brand, which I still run to this day, the number one tool I would say is Asana. And that's because Asana has allowed me to really organize everything in terms of standard operating procedures, client priority list, who I should focus on. All these things I'm just able to organize very clearly within Asana. And it just makes my everyday life easier. I don't have to think about anything because I have 50 different things on my mind at any given day. I'm going to forget. And that's where really Asana, it's like my secretary at this point.
We're of one mind, Sri. This podcast would not exist if it wasn't for Asana organizing everything. Let's see if we're in agreement on the carbon top tip as well. So what's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I think one of the easiest ways to reduce the carbon footprint would be just basically unplugging devices when not using them. That's one of the easiest ways. And also another thing, all e-commerce brands ship packages. Instead of using some fancy packaging material, just using cardboard packaging. That's one of the easiest and most straightforward ways to really make an impact, I would say.
I love that. I think you're the first person to say switch off unnecessary machines. And I don't think I've been into a single office where there weren't a whole load of tech that could quite easily be turned off. So I love that one. Thank you. We made the whole four in complete agreement. Love it. Sri, before we say goodbye to the audience, though, would you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media if they want to get in touch?
If you'd like to work with me and you run a brand doing $1 million a year or more, you can go onto my website at yourmarketing.com and schedule a free call with me. You'll get a potentially a free audit of your Google Ads account. Alternatively, you can also follow me on YouTube by just YouTubing my name, Sri Kanase. You can also find me on Instagram at Dedicated Young. Those are the easiest ways to find me where I'm most active.
Excellent. So everyone, if you want to apply for that, the chance to get a free audit by Sri or his team, then head to yourumarketing.com. That's Y-O-R-U marketing.com. Thank you so much, Sri, for being on the podcast today. It has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And I love the formula you've run through. And if people aren't making that high priority to implement right now on their Google Ads, or writing the note, must talk to agency about this, or writing the note, must talk to Sri about doing this for us, then they have not been listening properly. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was great talking to you about Google Ads.
So brilliant set of advice there from Sri. If you want to improve your Google Ads performance right now to bring it up to date with what is going on with Google, then you need to take those steps he outlined for us. It's not a quick tweak on some bids. It's rebuild the account so it's set up to allow Google to do the best possible job for you. Starting off with building the foundations in there. So foundationally, you want to make sure you've got your product feed in and you've optimized it for Google Ads. Don't just take the feed. Do with the feed to make it work as well as it can. And also make sure you're sending that right conversion tracking back in. So conversion tracking itself for your orders, but also that Google Analytics integration, all those other events bits that Sri was talking us through. Secondly, move your campaigns, reorganize your campaigns. They're either focused on acquisition or retention, and then split the budgets between those 80-20. Then within that piece, look at how you start playing around with your products and how you group your products to create the best results. And that's where the TPS comes in, which is, she says, referring to her notes, testing, profitability, scaling. So organize them logically and then see which ones rise to the top. Move them to profit, move them to scale as they start really performing for you. And once you've got your account kind of reorganized in that way, then you can move in to the point where he said the 80-15-5, which is where you add in some of that kind of top of funnel demand gen activity with the more display type functionality. Loads of good stuff there. And I do thoroughly endorse all four of his top tip answers. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to what we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar and you will be redirected straight to the right page on the website. With over 500 episodes now, it can be a little bit hard occasionally to find the right one. So those short links are becoming ever more popular. You can do that for any episode. Just put ecmp.info/number. In fact, you could pick a number from 001 to 515 and play Lucky Dip if you want to. Now, if you like this episode, then why not scroll back up your feed? Wherever you're listening, scroll up and find another episode that speaks to you and have a listen to that one too, because I promise it will help you as well. Thank you so much for tuning in to this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. We bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.